Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, December 1st, 2011. First comment I want to make tonight, by the way, the main science topic, I'll be talking a little bit about cosmic rays. And that's something that most of you think, well, it doesn't have much to do with me, but actually it does. It has something to do with cause and effect. Affects just about everybody on the planet. Well, literally everybody on the planet. These are very high energy particles that seemingly come in from unknown sources in outer space. And there's been some news activity this past week on that in the science world. So I wanted to give a little bit of a commentary on that. But first of all, I've had some recent, you might call, bouts with some standard press media type of thing, which I deal with quite regularly, the standard media. Many times they talk about me, use my name, or I have interactions with them where I actually get things published, you know, which are positive comments. But I always am a bit taken aback by news sources when they start attacking my style of presentation, especially my writing style. If you've been to my webpage, you know that it's a writing style that I have. There's three dots and then a thought, and then there's connected thoughts, and it'll weave back into previous thoughts. And it's a rolling conversation, is what it is. There's no sentence structure. There's no capital letters. I don't capitalize letters in people's names and countries. Sometimes I do if it's not real obvious, if it needs a capital letter, or if I'm trying to show respect for somebody. Like many times I'll capitalize the word God. To indicate that I'm talking about, say, a Christian God as opposed to one of the many pantheon of, say, Greek or Roman gods. But apart from that, it's pretty much without capital letters, without punctuation. And so when I see people criticizing those kind of styles, it's like, no, this is not acceptable. And then the other part of it is they completely miss the content of what I'm saying. It's like, oh, they're just interested in the style of your writing or the style of your presentation, or you don't you refuse to publish in the standard journals, and so therefore, you know, that cannot be acceptable. You should publish in the standard journals before we can talk to you about such a topic. All of this, you know, that's all of the circling of the wagons. That's the standard defenses that keep garbage science prominent in front of the public. And there are good reasons. There's a lot of quacks out there. And so there's a defense that's set up to keep the quacks out of the real news media. And there's a reason for that. But when they can't see the forest for the trees, when they can't analyze what somebody's saying because of a writing style, then they have a problem. They have a problem. I don't have a problem. And I'm not going to change my way of presenting, my way of giving information, or the completeness of my ability to give information. I'm not going to sacrifice that for some journal or magazine or television or radio venue that can't see through a writing style. So anyway, why am I talking about that? Because it's something that I have to deal with all the time. People want to attack you for cursory reasons. They don't want to talk about the real reasons you're out there and successful. They want to pick something over here and then talk about that. That's the way astronomers deal with things, these issues also. They don't want to talk about the core issues. They don't want to talk about the fundamental flaws in their own theories. They don't have to. They can publish in their journals. Science, Nature magazine will take their articles and publish them and publicize them and make a big deal out of them. For example, this article on cosmic rays that I'll be talking about in the main science section, if it's published in a journal, oh, that's acceptable. It's like public education. If you go to any public school, all of the paperwork is in order, all of the subject matter has been taught, the approved subject matter, the students' grades are in, there's the curve of grades with every class. Some students failed, some excelled, most were in the middle, and everything's in order. But was there education? Has education been accomplished? Do students leave there knowing how to think or critically analyze something? No, that's not part of the bell curve. So, once again, we have a society that fits in little boxes, and as long as everything fits neatly in the little box, and all the paperwork is in order, or the court system, look at any other institution. The court system is, if all the paperwork is in order and the case is closed, then justice has been served. Ridiculous concepts. You know, there's no critical thinking. There's everything. If everything is in order in terms of the paperwork, then life is good. So, at any rate, once again, just a bit of criticism there of the way standard media deals with science. It has to be according to their order. And if it's not, it's not acceptable. Then they attack you on your format, not your content. Okay. This past week, actually it was about 2 weeks ago, there were two comets that came in. There was about the 11th and 12th of November, I believe. And you can see these on the SOHO subpage where they deal with, it's like one of the events of the week type of thing. It's one of the pictures, the picture of the week or something like that. But at any rate, they talked about two massive CMEs, coronal mass ejections. That's where the sun just explodes off every point in its surface, sending out a vast amount of high energy particles, etc. But so I thought, well, gee, they don't talk about anything about the denial of comets, or so there probably isn't any comet activity associated with it. I almost didn't pull it up and look at it because it was a couple weeks ago. But I thought, well, okay, I'll take a look at this. So I pulled up the highest resolution images, video of these two CME events. This is on the SOHO. You can look this up yourself. Just type in Google SOHO and then look for the SOHO NASA site. There's other companies and other entities that have SOHO that'll come up on your Google search, but just look for the NASA website and then go there. And right when you go there, if you go there like right now, I think it's still there, it'll have a blip on these two CMEs that occurred on November 11th and 12th. And I think they have archives there where you can still see that if you go back into the history, into the archives of this picture of the day type of thing. Okay, so anyway, I'm looking at this, and at the very end of the sequence, the two CMEs have already blasted off, they've left the sun, and in from the south come two comets in succession. Big ones. Fairly big ones, and the tails are lost in the brilliance of the SOHO camera. It's on the it's the close image of the sun, where you're looking directly. There's a C3 and a C2 image. One is a blue background. One that you see the sun much smaller in the center, and you see a much bigger background area. And then the other one has a red background area. That's where we're looking almost directly at just the immediate area around the sun. But you see those two comets tunneling in from the south after the two CMEs have left. But once again, that coordination. And then the first thing when NASA or its apologists try and defend against comets hitting the sun and causing CMEs, they say, well, the comet wasn't there yet. The comet wasn't there yet. It didn't hit the sun, and the CMEs were already off and running. that is an error on their part. And there again, that's where they take the superficial route, the non-informed route, because what's really going on is action at a distance. Those comets are coming in, they're discharging the solar capacitor, and when that discharge gets strong enough, boom, it's like a spark plug. A spark plug is action at a distance in a sense, because it happens when it explodes all of the gas in the gas chamber in your engine, when the spark plug goes off. It doesn't have to be at every point in that chamber to cause the entire chamber to explode, the gas and air mixture in your engine. And likewise with action at a distance, comets coming in from the sun, it's like a spark plug, boom. And when that charge goes in, hits the sun, the fusion reaction occurs and bang, there the whole surface of the sun lifts up. Now remember, CMEs occur probably the highest percentage of the time without any comet interference or activity. So yes, it's not 100% guaranteed that those comets were the ones that caused the... In summary, basically it's very interesting to see how NASA simply ignores comets now when they come in towards the sun. It seems that talking about them brings a lot more attention to the issue than if they didn't say anything at all, and if they didn't say anything, then maybe nobody would notice. Well, I'm going to have to keep a little bit closer eye on that in the future. So, but at any rate, the point here also is that there is a tremendous amount of activity from comets from the south. Okay, just a brief summary. I wanted to get back to the issue of, and somewhat summarize the issue of comets coming in from the south, which we've been seeing for decades, literally. Well over a decade with the SOHO satellite, and we have hundreds and hundreds of examples of comets igniting the sun. And so what's happening today? NASA and its apologists, remember the apologists are paid people who set apart. They have web pages that are independent. At the bottom of those web pages it says, we are not related to NASA. These are not the opinions of NASA, yet it all appears to be NASA, NASA, NASA. And so here's the cycle. Something happens. Comets come in, hit the sun. And remember, this started back in October, early October, when those tremendous CMEs happened as comets hit the sun. NASA shut down the link. Spaceweather.com pretended like it never happened over the weekend. I'm trying to get a hold of these people, emailing them, saying, you've got to put the data up. Where's the data? And they're hiding the data. By Monday, they come out. Their apologists have all of the naysaying, oh, this really didn't happen. Don't think about this. Comets cannot do this, et cetera, et cetera. And now they just simply ignore it. So the cycle is that NASA has this kind of circling of the wagons, the apologists, subnetwork, which they directly pay for. Some of them comes out as like Discover Magazine. They come from all these different coordinated sources. But NASA never has to say anything themselves, you understand. That's the beauty of this protection scheme. And then NASA can say, well, we're off studying this, or they're probably in the background getting government funding to try and come up with some other reason for why little ice balls could possibly affect the sun. So at any rate, I just want to clarify this so people understand the level of complexity, the level of effort that's going into giving you bad science. Just another quick note on bad science. I started a study, kind of a personal study, probably many years ago now, showing how the standard weather reporting is simply incorrect. I'm talking about temperatures, wind directions, the prediction of what's going to happen tomorrow, but more directly, the stuff that's going on right now, the cloud patterns. So this past week, I was going to report that the trade winds, the Atlantic, what are called the trade winds, and then they come down and, of course, they wrap around south through the Caribbean, and then they wrap north across the North Atlantic. And these were the old trade winds, so-called, because that pushed the boats, the old square rig boats. Remember, they couldn't sail into the wind, so they had to go where the wind went. And so they would sail, for example, from England and Spain, Portugal. They would sail south along the African coast, which was part of the cycle of trade winds. They would sail south along the coast and till they hit about the 17 degree latitude. Then they would sail west, following the trade winds. Trade meaning that they came over and garnished resources in the Americas, the Latin America, what we call Latin America now, anywhere from 17 degrees north latitude south into all the way down to Tierra del Fuego at the tip of South America. Okay, now they sail back north along the Americas coast till they get up to about 35 or 40 degrees north. Then they sail east, following the trade winds back to England, Europe, Spain, etc. Okay, so that's why I'm just giving a little aside note. Why are they called the trade winds? So this past week, I noticed that the trade winds in the Caribbean had reversed, according to the weather pages. The standard worldwide weather, all of them showed the trade winds running east. And I thought, wow, that's very unusual, especially now, the end of the hurricane season. All of this should be stabilizing. The trade winds should be very steady coming out of the northeast and east into the region of the Caribbean. And so very clearly on the wind maps, the winds showing coming from the west and moving to the east, those are westerly winds, as in weather terminology. But so I was going to report that, going how unusual that was. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to say anything till I personally verify that the trade winds have reversed. So I set out and got my contacts, and I found out that, in fact, the trade winds had not reversed. So here we had almost a week's worth of weather reporting on the standard websites. This is the National Weather Service. This is the that feeds all the services like Intellicast, showing an easterly wind pattern through the South Atlantic, through the Caribbean, and east to Africa, when, in fact, the trade winds were exactly the opposite, from the northeast and from the east. So just another example of completely erroneous weather reporting coming from standard weather services. Just amazes me that, now this is all should be computer generated. You have, it's not too difficult to figure out what direction the wind is coming from. You can just stick your head out the window and figure that out. So this is not rocket science, but complete, the opposite, the completely wrong reporting from the standard weather media. Just a quick comment. I guess the only way I can say this is, wow, is the world a mess. This is unbelievable. You look on the main news outlets, CNN or MSNBC, and what do you see? Every country in the Mideast is topsy-turvy, upside down, throwing out old leaders, putting in new. The CIA has been very, very busy over there, causing major problems. This is all, remember that the CIA is the police force of the world bankers. And they're not, that's the American version, I should say. So this is not the group of people trying to look out for the best interest of you, the citizens of the United States. They are out there causing problems, causing the world governments to be in turmoil. So this giant dog and pony show of world governments, of individual governments around the world going topsy-turvy, is no accident. There are people very busy out there making sure that this world is one big mess. And what does that do? The end result is it keeps the bankers in power. The wars, the local wars, the local conflicts, now the U.S. and Pakistan, all of this is meant to do one thing, to keep the bankers in power in all of the little fiefdoms that they run from all the different sides. Just a quick comment on AT&T and T-Mobile were going to merge. And apparently that merger is on the skids. It's not going to happen. I hope it doesn't happen. That would probably be one of the worst mergers in history. AT&T is strictly a profit center, which is they should not call it AT&T anymore, because that gives one the impression it's the old Ma Bell, it's the old AT&T, Bell Labs. And that's just not the case. AT&T, there's probably not a bigger, what would you call, company that's poised to take the average person to the cleaners than AT&T. In their rates, their rate plans, gouging on the internet. I was in a place once where the only available internet was AT&T, and I went out and I bought an AT&T data card with a 5 gigabyte per month plan. After the first day of just getting email and doing a couple downloads of a page and things like that, most of that 5 gigabyte was used up, and I thought, I'm very well versed in telecommunications. There's no way I used 5 gigabytes. So I called the office and they said, well, you know, there's a lot of other stuff that happens when you're downloading and you really don't notice it. And I'm going, no, you know, don't try and pawn that off on me. I happen to be an expert in telecommunications. You might get by with that, telling some little old lady down the street that doesn't know anything, that but not me, sorry. And so I started measuring the downloads. I actually checked specific downloads, and sometimes it was 10 to 100 times the byte count that I was actually getting that was being counted on the AT&T network. It was unbelievable. And then just many other things. When the original AT&T was broken up, and they broke it up into the 5 different regions of the country for long distance and for local service, etc. The AT&T had coverage. There were services that, and this was a utility. It had governance from government agencies. It couldn't just charge any amount of money. That has all changed. It is just the world of telecommunications, and I've talked about this before, is just horrendous. The public is just being, I can't use another word, they're just being raped with the fees and the plans and the complexity of trying to manage communications. In the Old West, a horse was a necessity. If you stole or killed somebody's horse, it was paramount to killing them. The telecommunications companies today are just providing terrible service. They don't have complete coverage. If you're with one company, you're dependent on where that company has plans and associated plans. Prior to the merger, AT&T and T-Mobile were at war with one another. So AT&T would not allow T-Mobile to use its towers, would not sell them, and so you had two completely disjoint companies. And so for them to merge, and it's just going to be a giant mess. But the biggest problem is they are poised to reap untold damage on you, the public, the citizens. So I suspect that eventually that merger will go through, and we'll be back to an almost one-company country But this time, it's not going to be controlled. The myth is that there are public utility controls. There are not. These are independent companies, and whatever they can get away with monopolizing the communications industry, they will do. Just on that same note, if you look at the top businesses, I've said this before, iPhones, telecommunications, and gaming, things like that are the very top businesses in the country. What a pathetic statement for the United States. Okay, I'm going to turn a little bit. Many times I like to talk about customer, fan emails. And so now over the past, since October 20th, I started the discussion about the Jupiter winds. And so if you missed that, listen literally to all my shows since October 20th. So really over a month now. But the Jupiter winds, just let me summarize, are the winds on Earth that have been caused. These are severe, straight-line winds. They are appearing all over the place, all over the United States and all over the world, kind of at random. And the Weather Service is remiss to understand what's happening. I started talking about this, and people are seeing them, so I am starting to see reports. So anyway, here was a report that came in, just one of many that I've heard, but this is over the past week. So why am I still pounding on this Jupiter winds issue? Well, last week I explained that the solar wind does not go out in a linear sense. It kind of comes out like a curveball. And so we are still have the capacity to hook into those Jupiter winds, although I should say that they're probably pretty much tapering off and finished by now. Our normal weather pattern should be back to normal. But here was some email that came in over this past week. This was from Calgary, Alberta. Here it is. Hi, Jim. I told there was wind the other day. Let me see. Sustained wind 45 miles per hour with frequent gusts 75 to 85 miles per hour. These were in Calgary, in Canada. And so I wrote back and I said, yep, these are the Jupiter winds. And then the fan wrote back and said, hi, just an update to let you know that these high winds prompted city officials to shut down the entire downtown core of all types of traffic following an incident when a huge pane of glass fell from a high-rise building and slammed to the ground directly and injured the eyes of a few passing pedestrians. No pedestrians and vehicles were allowed inside the city core during these high winds, with gusts of in excess of 100 miles per hour at some point. All traffic had been rerouted around the core, away from the tall buildings. From listening to the news early this morning, there were dozens of buildings that lost many such big windows and caused serious damage at ground level. I guess it was good that the city imposed this restriction, even if it did cause me to be late that day, I assume, to work. Other than this, many trees fell and power lost in some parts of the city, which was also no surprise. A 40-foot pine tree came down, crashing down in my neighbor's front yard. Luckily, no serious injuries. The high winds began about noon yesterday, continued till about 11 p.m. The winds temporarily brought warmer temperatures, but as soon as the winds ended, the temperature quickly plummeted back to the freezing point and snow began to fall immediately afterwards. It was the weirdest weather I've ever experienced since living in southern Alberta next to the Rockies. That night at work, all I kept hearing from the employees was how the record-breaking Chinook wind caused so much damage to the city. Here we're so used to a Chinook wind being gentle with some warmth to it. But not this time. I tried to explain to them what you had said about the real cause of these winds, but I could not explain it. So anyway, then he went back, this person went back, listened to my show last week, and last week I answered all of those questions about the Jupiter winds. Why are they still going on, etc.? So, but at any rate, here's a real world event, Calgary, Alberta, Canada, dealing with the Jupiter winds. And that's what happens. They lock into a certain area, and do they blow hard? And there's no explanation. As this person said, the explanation is, oh, that's one of those record-breaking Chinook winds. Well, it's just, that's not an explanation. Winds don't just happen because the Chinook wind decided to blow that day. It takes energy to move the wind, to cause the wind, and that comes from someplace. There's a cause and effect. And the Weather Service is completely, completely remiss to understand what is going on. Remember that a few weeks ago, that when the New York had the tremendous weather that was completely unannounced, unpredicted by the National Weather Service, they just said it was just one of those rare record-breaking northern storms, northeastern storms. Well, I've seen things where they say, oh, well, that was November. November is not a reason for high winds. High winds happen all the time. So that's why I've kind of been pounding on this Jupiter winds concept. Number one, it shows that the standard weather services have no clue what's going on. They can't predict it. After it's happened, they can't explain it. So they just go, oh, that was because it's November. No. Winds don't happen because it's November. Winds happen because there is energy input into the world weather system. That is the only reason high winds occur. It doesn't happen because the Chinook winds decided to blow that day. No. It takes energy. There's a reason. There's a cause and effect. By the way, the 2 days that those winds blew in Calgary, we also had the new moon passing. So that's another factor in the laundry list of factors dealing with the energy systems that come into Earth from outer space, the things that drive our weather system. Okay, quickly, NASA Mars Explorer. I'm sure you've seen this in the news lately. The Mars Explorer from NASA, now heading on its way to Mars. What I thought was interesting in my analysis here, a few weeks ago I was talking about the Russian probe to go to Mars that, just had some problems. And so over my career, I have tracked the space probes that have been sent to Mars from Russia, from England, from Europe, from Japan, and none of them have managed to get to Mars. And so my way of looking at this is, that's statistically pretty unlikely that all of these countries have had failures trying to get to Mars, and NASA just goes out, zip, and goes out to Mars. Now, this is supposed to be a rover that's supposed to bring back analysis of the ground samples on Mars, trying to look for water and other evidence of past history of Mars. Okay. But nobody else seems to be able to get there. There was a Russian probe a number of years ago. It was just on its way, just about getting to Mars, and never heard from again. I have a suspicion that somebody is very much worried about people getting to Mars. Well, why would that be? Well, if what I say is correct, if what Velikovsky says is correct, Mars was a water planet only a few thousand years ago. Venus came by, sucked off its oceans and atmosphere. Mars very likely was an inhabited planet. And so in there, at that time, with advanced travel capabilities, electromagnetic propulsion, the ancient civilizations, and also they say Mars came much closer to Earth in its orbit. So that means that when Mars did come close, that trip to Mars was not that outrageous. It wouldn't be much different than going to the moon. It was much farther away than the moon, but in terms of the ability to get there, much easier than it is now. Mars, being a blue planet, had an atmosphere similar to Earth. The people went back and forth. And so the point is that if, and this is all secret society stuff, the bankers, the people that control the world, they harbor this kind of information as their own top secret information. So it would be in their best interest to send out a probe, keep everybody else from getting there, have NASA, who is their golden boy, go out there, send a probe, pretend like it's doing all this other stuff, but have the real part of the probe totally secret. Looking at the runes, looking at really what is on Mars, doing analysis around the old living habitats of Mars. Remember that the camera companies that take pictures from satellites, you look at, or say you're a scientist, let's see, you're a scientist at JPL or Goddard, and you have all of the Mars photographs in detail, high detail Mars photographs. You think, wow, there's no structure down there, there's no buildings, we could see them, etc. Remember that those photos come through a private company, and all of the information would be removed before any tier 2 level scientist would ever see them, or the public, for sure. So at any rate, the point is that it seems to me, and I've said this all along, there's a lot more exploration of Mars going on than you are being told. It's very clear to me. And what are they looking for? They don't have a little rover that looks like a Tonka toy driving around some ditch off in the backcountry of Mars. No, they're looking at the good stuff, and that information is coming back to Earth, being guarded by the top people, the controllers of the world, the people who control Tier 1 level science. So the question is, I wanted to venture off a little bit. What would a real mission to Mars look like? Well, first of all, it would make a lot of sense to have an electric-powered glider, basically a great big glider with a camera in it, which we have that technology. Cameras are light, battery systems are light, and a glider that would just fly around Mars, taking video, returning those signals back to a central station, and these could literally fly around for long periods of time, days and days at a time, to gather information about vast areas of Mars at a very close proximity to the surface, and then also to go to specific areas and take passes, three-dimensional photographs, 3D photographs of those areas, so you have from all different angles very high resolution photos of the good stuff. But as I say, that information never coming back to Earth. The orbiters, the same thing. You would be taking stereoscopic 3D photos of the surface, high resolution. The atmosphere of Mars is relatively thin. You could see a high level of detail from orbit. You would send, I've always said this, if you had a rover on Mars, you wouldn't put tracks on it to go over rocks and rubble that could be big, much bigger than the vehicle. It would get blocked and then you would just not get anywhere. You would put legs, kind of like a sea crab. I don't know if most of you possibly have seen sea crabs. You've been to the ocean, they have 8 legs. And they can go over rocks, they can go on the sand, they can go under the ocean. They're very versatile, very mobile. Those 8 legs get them up and over, and at the end they've got a little point almost. That would be the type of vehicle transportation that you would put on your Mars rover. Not a set of tracks. That's about as useless. That would work good in your living room maybe, but not on Mars. So all I'm saying is a real issue, a real research venture on Mars would have equipment very different than the kind that you see on Mars. Okay, just another quick note here. I was going to talk about the once again the wind systems that are out there. Last week on my show, I did another commentary, which I've been doing quite a bit recently, about the three-blade wind systems. Remember that last, I think it was February, I did a full show special on Coast to Coast called The Myth of Alternative Energy, where I described that the world would need 77 million wind towers of the bigger type, the 2-megawatt three-blade systems, at the efficiency rating, etc. It would need around 77 million such towers to provide the world's energy needs, which is absurd. I mean, New York City would need hundreds of thousands of them. And so the obvious result is that there's just not capacity. So when you talk about, but anyway, last week I did a commentary about Prince Philip's. Well, Friday morning, Alex Jones did a special on wind towers. I always get a kick out of that. I think Alex listens to my show. So hi, Alex. I hope you're listening again this week. But there is an article that came out showing that 14,000 wind towers are now defunct in the United States alone. And so there's nobody, there's no zoning issue, there's no law that had been passed for somebody to go out, somebody responsible, the people who made the money off of these towers and got the government subsidies. There's no requirement for them to go out and take down these monstrosities and do something with them. So at any rate, right now there are over, apparently, 14,000 defunct wind towers in the United States, just sitting there rusting. Apparently they're still killing birds because the blades are still whipping around on some of them. So also it is clear that when some of these go into disrepair, it costs more to repair them than it does to just leave them sit there. So there's no incentive to fix these, so the number is growing and growing. Anyway, the myth of alternative energy, it turns out that wind is the best source of energy, in my opinion, but here's the point. Long ago, back, I don't know if this was in the 50s or 60s, NASA was given, probably the 60s or 70s, I would say in that era, NASA was given a commission to study wind generation. They came up with a three-prop design and said this was the most efficient. That's what everybody has been using without question. But there are tremendous problems with these systems, which are now becoming obvious because of use. People are using them. They're very inefficient at low speed wind speeds. You can't use them at high wind speeds because they vibrate. If it's too cold, you can't use them, which, I mean, in the northern climates is ridiculous because it's cold for 6 months out of the year. If the wind doesn't blow, you still have to put a backup system to provide all your electricity, and so you have to build and maintain a facility to provide all of the energy anyway. There has never been any effort put into storing energy, so when it's a windy day, you would have more energy than you need, and you could store that energy in some manner. No energy storage facilities are in existence. So wind, the way it was implemented, is a joke. But at any rate, I want to make this comment. It was all from the very beginning. It was my opinion that the NASA design, once again, Tier 2 science, was allowed bad science, planned obsolescence. It never would solve the problem. And when it finally became obvious that a lot of money and a lot of time and effort and a lot of greeny hope, tree-hugger hopes, had gone into putting these up, and it's kind of the symbol of green energy, so to speak, after the realization that this never would work, that it didn't work, that it never had any ability to work, that would give the bad name to wind energy and it would stifle any future real efforts to provide a system that was efficient at low wind speeds. You see what I mean? So all in all, the entire effort to put wind generation up has been a massive failure. And in that massive failure has guaranteed the energy companies, nuclear, coal, and oil, propane, those industries, the future. It has guaranteed them the future and to lock the public into very costly electricity for the future. One other quick comment. There's a lot of commentary these days about 2012, the end of the world, because they were soon approaching that. But what this does is you've got the myriad of nutcases out there, goofy science, ridiculous statements, unbased on reality, not founded in any type of reality. So this just gives an avalanche of opportunity for standard science to come in and, those 2012 people in Planet X and the end of the world and Nostradamus and the Mayan calendar and crossing the galactic plane, all ridiculous. Look at how ridiculous those people are. And they can lump it all together and then give you a quick paintbrush, a quick brushing of how wonderful standard science is. And, gee, you should just rely on us because standard science is so great and wonderful. And we're just out to here to help you and get you through that maze of internet quackery. But just remember, 2012 and the Mayan calendar and all the garbage that came out was all a very much a planned disinformation campaign. Standard disinformation campaign techniques, where they give you something ridiculous, let it run for a while, and then come in and save the day with their NASA apologists, the NASA circle the wagons, defend the standard theories. So at any rate, all of this, my name has been thrown in there a lot. After all the negative comments I put on Comet Elenin and finally put the last nail in the coffin of that thing, every now and then we do web searches to see where my name is being used or more often misused. Somebody tried to combine my work and, you know, the prediction of the Comet Elenin and that the dates would be used by the powers that be, so to speak, to create other events, that those dates were meant for other events like the China earthquake or the tsunami in Japan, etc. And then the wave of, that was due to Comet Elenin coming out, which is, of course, they would predict it, and then the date would happen, and then the goofy people about Comet Elenin would come afterwards. Somebody tried to combine, and during this whole time, of course, I'm saying this is goofy, this is ridiculous. There's nothing to Comet Elenin relative to Earth. Somebody tries to combine my statement of that with the fact that predicted that Comet Elenin would change the psychology of Earthlings, and that we would enter some kind of new enlightened age. Well, clearly that didn't happen either. But they tried to say that Jim McCanney was part of the people predicting such a thing. So you just see the level of which the efforts trying to mix my work with other ridiculous things to give me a bad name. Okay, let me get on to the main science topic here. By the way, I noticed something this week in just searching. MSNBC is, of course, one of the standard mouthpieces of the standard news media, CNN, MSNBC. But I got a kick out of the fact that James Oberg, who is a NASA apologist, he's a professional NASA apologist, is the editor of MSNBC Science for Space Science. So NASA good, everything else bad. Just one other element in the constant barrage of misinformation handed out to the public. And, of course, James Oberg is a retired NASA employee who somehow took up the role of defending NASA. So very much supported it. I bet you he doesn't miss any meals. Got a pretty good income based on that particular role. But not working for NASA, mind you, working for MSNBC, the controlled news media. It's that big network of control, network information control, control of bad science to the public, and that's just one other piece of it. Cosmic rays. What are cosmic rays? Cosmic rays are high energy particles that basically come in from outside of our solar system primarily. And they come in from all directions, and you can measure them. They hit the upper atmosphere, they cascade, cause other secondary particles, but they're coming constantly. There are certain sources of outer space where they seem to be concentrated, but in general they come from all directions. Okay, now the it was about 1999, I believe. I was sitting one day looking at the SOHO, the solar observatory, the NASA solar observatory that's in orbit out in front of Earth. It's towards the sunward side of Earth. And views the sun on a constant basis. So anyway, excuse me, there was a solar flare. And within about 8 minutes, and in fact, the light from the sun takes about 8 minutes to get to us. Concurrent with the solar flare being visible, which means that's how much time it took that solar flare, the visibility of that solar flare to get to the SOHO satellite, which is relatively close to Earth, along came a spray of cosmic rays into the C3 camera of, that's the blue camera of the SOHO satellite. And I thought to myself, I was sitting there watching, and I thought, wow, cosmic rays associated with that blast from the sun. And so I immediately posted it on the web page, and it was there for about 3 days. And of course, NASA didn't know what to do, didn't report it. Later, they took credit for that great discovery, as you might imagine. But I had already discovered it. I think the Atlantis to Tesla book has the discussion of this whole incident in the appendix, my Atlantis to Tesla book. But at any rate, it showed clearly that the cosmic rays were coming from our sun. Directly from our sun, associated with an explosive event on the sun, and not one that blew the sun up, not one where I'm not sure if you hear that. I'm in kind of a noisy area here. It clearly showed that the cosmic rays came from the sun, an explosion on the sun, and the but just an average, everyday explosion. Wasn't that amazing? It didn't kill everybody on Earth. But here came a whole series of cosmic rays. So now if you extrapolate that into the galaxy, the wider galaxy, then or the universe. So if all of the stars are every now and then puffing out a burst of cosmic rays, then it would seem to make sense that cosmic rays would be coming from all directions in outer space. Because once they leave that star system, they're off and running in interplanetary space. But scientists have been remiss to explain where these come from, primarily because they don't want to admit that your average star on the street is emitting cosmic rays. So this past week, cosmic rays got into the news again. And here is the, this was in Science Magazine, November 25th issue of the journal Science, where scientists are talking about, and I always love when they come up with these terms. They said, a super bubble, a new term, a space super bubble could spawn cosmic rays, as if there's some kind of magic area out there where cosmic rays are coming from. A super bubble. And so at any rate, the end result is they are seeing new stars forming in a region around about 4,500 light years from Earth, and there seems to be an excessive amount of cosmic ray activity coming from that area. So, at any rate, the point is that I always love the way they talk about these. Cosmic rays are electrically charged because they're electrically charged particles. But they say they can get pushed and pulled around by interstellar magnetic fields in the gas between the stars as they zip through space, obscuring from where they come from. Now they're suggesting that cosmic rays come from these stars that are forming, about 500 stars that are forming in this particular region, and they call it a super bubble. But that doesn't explain why cosmic rays are coming from all directions in outer space. That is the real issue. Slowly, it appears that the standard science is creeping towards an explanation for cosmic rays, that they are actually coming from stars. But notice they only point at this group of young stars that are actively forming in a certain region around, I think it was in the Swan constellation, Swan. At any rate, okay, well, that was rather brief, but I wanted to include the details. But the obvious situation is that the cosmic rays are coming from regular stars, just like our own sun. The cosmic rays that came off that burst back in 1999 are well on its way out, that would be 12 light years now, away from Earth, well past our nearest star. And that's just from our particular star. So if you look around in outer space, cosmic rays can come from literally any direction in space because there are stars from literally any direction in space. Just a quick message here. We're dealing with the 1st of December. Pretty much this week, it would be about the last week to order to guarantee that purchased orders would arrive by the Christmas holidays and before the Christmas mail and shipping rush. And if you're in foreign countries, it might be a little questionable now, but you could always tell the people, well, it's on its way. But just remember, go to the website, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com, 7 letters, JMCCSCI.com, and put in your orders. Remember that helps support this show, commercial-free show. The water filters, the pre-filter, the books, etc. JMCCSCI.com, short for JMcCanniScience.com. But I have the abbreviated version to make it easier to get there. JMCCSCI.com. Join me next week as I talk about other scientific issues. Radio show that has information you will not hear anywhere else. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.